Spectrum Business works with small businesses nationwide, so we know that running your own business means doing it all. Marketing, sales, inventory, customer service, and more. Spectrum One for Business helps you keep it all connected for just $49.99 a month. Get fast, reliable internet, advanced Wi-Fi with Security Shield, and a free mobile line for one low price. Stay connected and do it all with Spectrum One for Business. Only $49.99 a month. Go to spectrum.com/business to learn more. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
The most exciting part of a vacation stay at a home rental? Easy. It's being greeted upon arrival with a rusted lockbox affixed to the underside of a stranger's condo. Yeah, you simply twist knobs, click gears, jiggle it, and then rip it off its moorings, and voila! Your prize is a key to a questionable home rental and maybe tetanus. When you just want to get your vacation started by actually getting into your room, it matters where you stay. At Hilton, we deliver your key right to your phone on the Hilton Honors app. Hilton, for the stay.
The moment from last night's first presidential debate when President Trump refused to denounce white supremacy continues to make news in Washington today. More on that in a moment. I'm your host, Greta Bronner, and this is Washington Today. It was a day where many woke up wondering what happened last night, including members of Congress on both sides of the aisle. Reaction came fast and from both sides as Washington and the nation processed what happened during the debate last night between President Trump and former Vice President Joe Biden. We'll speak with Oren Segal of the Anti-Defamation League on white supremacy and the Proud Boys in a few minutes. And on Capitol Hill, former FBI Director James Comey was back in front of the Senate Judiciary Committee, but this time it was virtually, to talk about the Mueller investigation, Russian interference in the 2016 election, and the Steele dossier. We talked with the Washington Post Devlin Barrett on what happened during the hearing. More on that later on in the program. But we begin in Cleveland, where last night on the debate stage, moderator Chris Wallace of Fox News asked President Trump about white supremacy. Here's that exchange.
You have repeatedly criticized the vice president for not specifically calling out Antifa and other left-wing extremist groups. But are you willing tonight to condemn white supremacists and militia groups and to say that they need to stand down and not add to the violence in a number of these cities, as we saw in Kenosha and as we've seen in Portland?
Sure,
are you
I'm
prepared
to
specifically
that,
do it?
Well,
I would say almost everything I see is from the left wing, not from the right wing.
So what are you saying?
I'm willing to do anything. I want to see peace.
Then do it, sir.
Say it.
Do you want to call them? What do you want to call them? Give me a name.
White supremacists and
Proud Boys. Stand back and stand by. But I'll tell you what. Somebody's got to do something about Antifa and the left, because this is not a right-wing problem. This is a
left-wing.
This is a left-wing problem.
White supremacists. Antifa is an idea, not an organization.
Oh, you got it.
Not malicious. That's what his FBI. His FBI director said.
Well, then you know what?
We're done, sir.
Everybody in your administration tells you the truth has a bad idea.
Can I tell you what?
You have no ideas that are.
Antifa is a dangerous radical group.
All right, gentlemen, we're now moving on to the Trump and Biden records.
They'll overthrow you.
When a president, I'm going to ask a question. When the president seeks a second term.
That was President Trump with Chris Wallace last night during the first presidential debate. His remarks were instantly condemned by those on both sides and were the main story today in campaign 2020 coverage. This was not the only contentious moment between the two candidates, and it prompted the Commission on Presidential Debates, who is the organizer of them, to release the following statement. Quote, "The Commission on Presidential Debates sponsors televised debates for the benefit of the American electorate. Last night's debate made clear that additional structure should be added to the format of the remaining debates to ensure a more orderly discussion of the issues. The Commission on Presidential Debates will be carefully considering the changes that it will adopt and will announce those measures shortly. The Commission is grateful to Chris Wallace for the professionalism and skill he brought to last night's debate and intends to ensure that additional tools to maintain order are in place for the remaining debates." End quote. Before heading to Duluth, Minnesota tonight, the president attempted to clarify what he meant last night during the debate.
I don't know who the Proud Boys are. I mean, you'll have to give me a definition because I really don't know who they are. I can only say they have to stand down, let law enforcement do their work. Law enforcement will do the work more and more as people see how bad this radical liberal Democrat movement is and how weak, the law enforcement's going to come back stronger and stronger. But again, I don't know who Proud Boys are, but whoever they are, they have to stand down, let law enforcement do their work. Just stand by. Look, law enforcement will do their work. They're going to stand down. They have to stand down. Everybody, they have to stand, whatever group you're talking about, let law enforcement do the work. Now, Antifa is a real problem because the problem is on the left. And Biden refuses to talk about it. He refuses to issue the words law and order. You saw that last night when he choked up. He can't say the words because he'll lose the rest of the left. So he's got to condemn Antifa. Antifa is a very bad group. Yeah. I want law and order to be a very important part. It's a very important part of my campaign. And when I say that, what I'm talking about is law enforcement has to, the police have to take care. And they should stop defunding the police like they've done in New York, like they've done in New York. I just told you. I've always denounced any form of any of that you have to denounce. But I also, Joe Biden has to say something about Antifa. It's not a philosophy. These are people that hit people over the head with baseball bats. He's got to come out and he's got to be strong and he's got to condemn Antifa. And it's very important that he does it.
President Trump earlier today. We'll have more on who the Proud Boys are in just a few minutes when we speak with Oren Sagal, Vice President of Extremism at the Anti-Defamation League. But first, more from the president, who was asked if he'd participate in the next two scheduled debates. Here's what he had to say.
I can't hear. I hear he doesn't want to go forward, but that's up to him. I mean, I would like to. By every measure, we won the debate easily last night. I think he was very weak. He looked weak. He was whining. We won the debate by almost every poll that I saw. If you look at the various polls, I looked at about six of them. We won every one of them. So, no, I don't mind debating him. I hear he wants to get out of the debates. I don't know. That's up to him.
The next presidential debate is scheduled for October 15th in Miami, Florida. You'll be able to listen to it here on C-SPAN Radio or watch it on the C-SPAN networks. Back to reaction to President Trump's remarks on white supremacy. Today, Vice President Joe Biden began his train tour of Ohio and Pennsylvania. According to the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette, quote, after stops in Cleveland and Alliance, Mr. Biden's train will roll to Pittsburgh, where he's expected to speak about his vision to help communities like Pittsburgh who built this country recovering from the Trump presidency, according to his campaign. He will then board the train to La Trobe. The campaign notes that La Trobe is reminiscent of Main Street towns like Scranton across America that Mr. Biden says he's fought for during his career. Mr. Trump headlined a rally there earlier this month. Then Mr. Biden will continue eastward to Johnstown, where he'll deliver remarks again, focused on Mr. Trump's broken promise in 2016, the campaign alleges, that he'd bring back jobs and reopen mills. The president's son, Donald Trump Jr., held an event in Johnstown last week. Here are the former vice president's remarks on President Trump's comments on white supremacy last night.
Thank you, Mr. Vice President. You mentioned the president's comments about the Proud Boys, stand back and stand by. Today, they've made that really a rallying cry. They're rallying around that slogan almost that they've created now for it. What are your fears about the implications of the president's rhetoric? And do you have a message for the Proud Boys today?
Cease and desist. Cease and desist. The American people will decide who the next president of the United States will be, period. So I'm urging the American people, go out and vote. Show up. If you can vote early, vote early. Vote whatever way is most convenient for you, but vote. And if you show up in large enough numbers, nothing is going to change. I promise you, if in fact we win this election, this president will step down. It's a lot of bravado. He has no alternative. The American people would not stand for it. No agency would stand for that happening. My message to the Proud Boys and every other white supremacist group is cease and desist. That's not who we are. This is not who we are as Americans.
That was Democratic President candidate Joe Biden earlier today in Cleveland. Find more coverage of his train trip on our website. Now on Capitol Hill, Republican South Carolina Senator Tim Scott spoke out about the remarks last night made by the president. While meeting with the president's pick to replace the late Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg, Judge Amy Coney Barrett, Senator Scott said the following.
You might have concern the president's refusal last night during the debate to condemn white supremacist groups?
I think he misspoke in response to Chris Wallace's comment. He was asking Chris what he wanted to say. I think he misspoke. I think he should correct it. If he doesn't correct it, I guess he didn't misspeak.
Senator Tim Scott earlier today on Capitol Hill. After his weekly Republican Party lunch, Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell was also asked about the president's remarks. Senator McConnell said he agreed it is, quote, unacceptable not to condemn white supremacists after President Donald Trump did not answer a question about denouncing the Proud Boys during the first presidential debate. Here's that exchange from earlier today on Capitol Hill.
His debate performance problematic for independent women who Republicans need in Senate races across the country?
Well, let me just say with the debate, it was not Lincoln Douglas. And second, with regard to the white supremacy issue, I want to associate myself with the remarks of Senator Tim Scott that he put out earlier today. I think he said it exactly correctly, and that's exactly how I would express myself on that issue.
What are those remarks? Can you explain what Tim Scott said that you endorse?
Yeah, he said it was unacceptable not to condemn white supremacists. And so I do so in the strongest possible way.
Does it hurt Senate
have
Republicans?
The opportunity, though, on the national stage to make that case, to and also to say to the, he said, instead of the Proud Boys, that they should stand by and stand back. Was that appropriate for him to say that specifically about the Proud Boys?
Yeah, I think I just answered that question. Anyone else?
Does it hurt Senate Republicans down ballot those sorts of things in the president's debate performance last night?
No, I don't know any of my colleagues who will have problems as a result of that.
That was Senator Mitch McConnell earlier today. Other Republicans, including Senator Mitt Romney, Republican of Utah, often a Trump critic, said President Trump should have condemned white supremacists, as did Senator Bill Cassidy, Republican of Louisiana. You're listening to Washington Today. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi, Democrat of California, expressed exasperation Wednesday over President Donald Trump's constant interruptions at the presidential debate and that no one turned his microphone off. In an interview on MSNBC's Morning Joe, Pelosi was asked if the additional presidential debates should go on as scheduled, given that the president broke all of the rules at the debate Tuesday night in Cleveland. She also reacted to the president's remarks about the Proud Boys. Here's what she had to say.
Well, it was really a sad night for our country in that the president of the United States would not disassociate himself from white supremacists, some terrorists in our country. I lost a lot of sleep last night over that one fact. But I did know that he has never respected the dignity of his office, and he demonstrated that last night. I think one thing he did present was the authenticity of who he is. With disregard for bringing our country together, with any knowledge of the challenge we face in the coronavirus crisis, with catering to his base by saying what he said about the Proud Boys and white supremacists. Actually, he's moved. In Charlottesville, we were disgusted when he said there are good people on both sides. This time, he didn't even grant that to the other side. And so this was a very sad occasion. I think we have to be prayerful. Yesterday, I began the day with a group of interfaith people led by Sister Simone Campbell, of course, and others, though, who were having a day of prayer of unity for our country, that we could come together to meet the needs of the American people. Clearly, with this president, our prayers, either we're not praying hard enough or they're just not working. But some kind of intervention is necessary. And if his family, for his personal health, or his Republican associates, for the good of their party and our country, don't want to intervene, then the election has to be the major intervention on this president's behavior.
Should there be, Madam Speaker, should there be more debates, given that the president broke all the rules that he agreed to during this debate last night?
Well, you, as you know, I never thought that he would, that anybody should reduce themselves to being on the stage mm-hmm. with him, because we know what his behavior was going to be like. I'm just sorry that they didn't turn off the phone, the microphone when it was Joe Biden's turn to speak, and turn it on when it was the president's turn to speak, and we would have not had this disruption. You would have thought that would have been a simple thing to do. But, you know, he's been enabled his whole life, and now the American people are paying a price for the fact that has never, no one has ever said to him, no. And this is so tragic, because I pray for him every day. I pray for the personal security of him and his family. I pray that God will open his heart to the goodness of the American people so that we can come together, e pluribus unum, from any one that our founders gave us guidance to do. But when you see the behavior, just the lack of respect for the office that he holds, the indignity of what, but what you saw really was authenticity. You saw his authenticity, and you saw Joe Biden's authenticity.
Speaker Nancy Pelosi on MSNBC this morning. Well, earlier this afternoon, we spoke with Oren Segal, Vice President of Extremism at the Anti-Defamation League. First of all, what is your organization? What do you do?
So the ADL is an anti-hate organization, been around for over 100 years. And the mission for all that time is to stop the defamation of the Jewish people and to secure justice and fair treatment for all. So we track extremism and hate, work with communities to push back against that every day.
How would you define Proud Boys?
So the Proud Boys are a violent extremist group that are focused primarily on opposition to the left, but feature many of the misogynistic, anti-immigrant, Islamophobic elements that we see in other hate groups. The biggest reason we have been concerned is because of a violent agenda that has been part of the group since its founding.
When were they founded, and have they said they are white supremacists?
Well, no, they deny being white supremacists, and ADL has not called them white supremacists either. We view them as an extremist group, many who espouse bigotry, sometimes often working side by side at events with white supremacists. But we define them primarily as a violent extremist group. Now, they were founded in 2016 by an individual by the name of Gavin McInnes, you know, formerly formed the Vice Media Company. And since then, you know, he has brought together, you know, men who form chapters around the country who ostensibly believe that, you know, it's their role in order to sort of bring back Western chauvinism, as they would describe it.
Given how you defined them then, and the president, the question the president was asked at the first presidential debate, what is your reaction to his answer?
When the president was asked to condemn white supremacy, you know, he missed an opportunity to do that. Instead, he pivoted and talked about, you know, the threat of Antifa as being, you know, more significant or the real threat. And when asked about the Proud Boys, again, he said, stand back and stand by, as opposed to using that as an opportunity to condemn a group with a history of violence and bigotry.
He said today, before leaving the White House for a rally in Minnesota, that he has always denounced white supremacy. Your reaction?
Well, I don't think the fact that he believes that he's always denounced white supremacy means that he actually has. You know, denouncing it requires verbalizing that denunciation. So when people are concerned, you know, several years ago about Charlottesville and his inability to sort of categorically and consistently condemn the white supremacy there, to, you know, what we have seen more recently, where it's not even acknowledging the threat, the violent threat of white supremacy that has been on a rise in this country, and instead focusing on other elements. I think people, it's not unreasonable for people to demand and require a more clear message about the type of hatred that he's being asked to denounce.
What is your group's definition of Antifa or Antifa?
So the Antifa is a sort of a movement known for confronting fascists and white supremacists essentially in the street. Their MO is that the only way to combat fascists and Nazis is to physically confront them in the street. It's not a type of organization that, you know, there are card-carrying members. It's very much a loose collection of networks and individuals and other groups who aggressively oppose those that they perceive as their enemies. They have, over the years, engaged in physical confrontation with some of the groups that, you know, we've talked about.
Have they, or do you find the group offensive in their tactics?
Yeah, I think it's really important to condemn and distance oneself from violence of any kind, because not doing so normalizes that as a tactic. And I think, you know, those individuals who, under the banner of Antifa, have physically confronted even neo-Nazis with violence need to be condemned for that tactic. A, it normalizes violence. B, it only serves to promote the narrative that white supremacists have been putting out there, that they are being victimized and they are being silenced. So practically, it's not a useful tactic. But beyond that, violence can never be the answer. And so at ADL, we reject any effort to fight bigotry, even as horrible as it is, with violence.
How is the ADL using this moment to advance the conversation?
Well, you know, I think what has occurred in more ways than I think most people would imagine is that the extremist narratives and the hatred that can easily be found on sort of fringe spaces, both online and in the real world, are now seeming to lead our nightly news or the headlines in our papers every single day. And I think, you know, we're concerned that there may be fatigue or misunderstanding about what extremism is, what types of hate is becoming normalized, not only in our public discussion, but frankly, on our smartphones. And so what we're trying to do at ADL is expose hatred, to educate the public so people don't forget how to recognize the hatred, and also to model the need to hold people accountable for what they do and what they say. You know, one of the things that we cannot allow is for the normalization of hatred and bigotry to turn people and make them silent. We have to consistently call out hatred when we see it.
Oren Segal, thank you for the conversation.
Thanks for having me.
With Kizik Hands Free Shoes, motion sounds something like this. Kizik helps you experience the magic of motion. With over 200 patents and easy on, easy off technology, you'll never have to touch your shoes again. There are hundreds of styles and colors, plus a squish like nothing you've ever felt. For a limited time, get a free pair of socks with your first order at kizik.com/socks.
You're listening to Washington Today. I'm your host, Greta Bronner. With more from today's headlines, we go back to Capitol Hill, where late this afternoon, House Speaker Nancy Pelosi announced that House Democrats will press ahead with a vote Thursday on their own $2.2 trillion stimulus proposal, a sign that a bipartisan deal still has yet to be struck to deliver further pandemic relief. Speaker Pelosi made the announcement after a 90-minute meeting with Treasury Secretary Steve Mnuchin. She said in a statement that talks between the two negotiators will continue. Quote, today, Secretary Mnuchin and I had an extensive conversation, and we found areas where we are seeking further clarification. Our conversations will continue, said the California Democrat, but added, quote, we will be proceeding with our vote tomorrow on the updated HEROES Act in order to formalize our proffer to Republicans in the negotiations to address the health and economic catastrophe in our country. In some other news, the released grand jury recordings in the Breonna Taylor case will be delayed until noon Friday, according to Kentucky Attorney General Daniel Cameron's office. The highly unusual public release of secret grand jury proceedings had been expected Wednesday afternoon after a Jefferson County State Court judge ordered recordings of the 2.5-day presentation to the panel be filed with the court by noon local time. According to CNN, Cameron sought a one-week delay in a motion filed Tuesday, arguing that it was necessary to protect the interests of witnesses, particularly, quote, private citizens named in the recordings. Taylor was fatally shot in her Louisville apartment in March by officers executing a drug warrant. The grand jury did not indict any of the officers involved on charges related to her death. One officer was charged in connection with shots he fired into an adjacent apartment. The NFL postponed Sunday's game between the Tennessee Titans and the Pittsburgh Steelers until Monday or Tuesday because of the coronavirus outbreak involving the Titans, marking the first change to the league's regular season schedule as it operates amid the pandemic. The league said in a written statement issued Wednesday that the game, which is to be played in Nashville, quote, will be rescheduled to allow additional time for further daily COVID-19 testing and to ensure the health and safety of players, coaches, and game day personnel. Details on the new game date and time on either Monday or Tuesday will be announced as soon as possible. And across the Atlantic, UK Prime Minister Boris Johnson called on Britons to stick to the rules in order to avoid tougher coronavirus restrictions as the country grapples with a swift upsurge in the number of reported coronavirus cases, saying, quote, the best way forward to protect the NHS, save lives, to keep our children in school, and the economy moving is to follow the rules wherever we live. The UK reported an additional 7,143 cases of the coronavirus on Tuesday, surpassing the number of new cases reported in late April and early May when strict nationwide lockdown measures were in place, although there are now more daily COVID-19 tests being carried out than in the spring. Former FBI Director James Comey in a Senate hearing Wednesday sought to defend the Bureau's efforts to investigate President Donald Trump and his 2016 campaign ties to Russia, amid attacks from Republican senators looking to tie him directly to some of the investigation's missteps. Mr. Comey approved the launch of the FBI's investigation into Russian interference in the 2016 election and ties between Russia and the members of Trump campaign, dubbed Crossfire Hurricane. Trump fired Comey in May of 2017, citing the FBI's Russia probe, prompting the appointment of Robert Mueller as special counsel. Since his ouster, Mr. Comey has consistently been one of Trump's favorite political targets. The president has casted Mr. Comey as a villain who orchestrated a deep state effort to thwart his presidency. The hearing was the latest in a series organized by Senate Judiciary Chair Lindsey Graham, scrutinizing the activities of investigators involved in Crossfire Hurricane. Here's Senator Graham's exchange with Mr. Comey.
So the FBI in August of 2016 had information from the CIA informing the FBI that, in fact, Mr. Page was a resource. Did you not know that?
I did not know of the nature of his relationship with the CIA. I'm telling you is what I read in the Horowitz report.
Do you think it would have been fair for the FBI to tell the court that Mr. Page had a reason to be talking to these people because he was working with the CIA? Would that have been a fair thing to tell the court?
I don't agree with your characterization of what Mr. Horowitz found. So
no, I'm talking about you as a director. The FBI has in its possession in August 2016 information from the CIA confirming what Mr. Page said, that he in fact was assisting the CIA, which explained the contacts. That was never given to the court. Should they have been informed of that? Because that's exculpatory to Mr. Page.
I believe Mr. Horowitz found that they should have at least considered informing
should
the court.
You're the director of the FBI. Would you wish that had been done if you had known about it?
I'm sorry, Senator, that what had been done?
That you had informed the court that Mr. Page was in fact working with the CIA, and that explains these contacts. Do you think, out of a sense of fairness, the court should have been informed of that fact?
Again, I don't agree with your preamble. I don't think the record established that he was working with the CIA. I think Horowitz found he was a contact, which means we've got the email
from the CIA confirming that he was a source for the CIA. Are you aware of the fact that that email later on was doctored?
Again, I don't accept what you said. I don't think the record establishes he was a source for the CIA. I am aware from
why,
the Harvard
Why is report. Mr. Kleinsmith facing criminal indictment?
I only know what I've read in the public record, that he was accused of
You're
changing.
You're the director of the FBI. You didn't know that your own agency had information from the CIA verifying what Mr. Page told you, that these contacts had a basis, in fact, because he was working with the CIA. Did you know that Mr. Kleinsmith doctored the email for it to read that there was no association between Page and the CIA, that he changed there was to there was not? How do you feel about that?
I know nothing about Mr. Kleinsmith other than what I've read in the public
record. Well, how do you
record?
Feel in general about an FBI lawyer doctoring information exculpatory to somebody being surveilled?
Any false statement in the course of an investigation is deeply
But you didn't know anything about that, okay? In October, when the warrant was submitted, the application was submitted, what effort had been made to verify the dossier in October?
I don't know specifically. I know the Counterintelligence Division was working to see how much of it they could rule in and rule out.
How much time did they spend ruling in and ruling out regarding the dossier in October?
I do not.
You don't know?
I don't.
You signed the application. Whose job is it to make sure the facts are right when you present them to the FISA court?
Well, the most basic level, the affiant, whoever is signing the affidavit.
Did you sign the affidavit?
No. I signed a certification, which is required of the FBI director.
Okay. Does the FBI director have any responsibility to make sure the facts are right when they're given to the court?
Not in connection with the certification, but in general, the FBI director is responsible for everything that's being done underneath the FBI director.
That was former FBI Director James Comey with Senator Judiciary Chair Lindsey Graham. Democrats have accused Graham of using the committee as a political tool in the months leading up to the election to bolster the president's claims that he was unfairly targeted by the Obama administration officials who investigated his campaign. Here's an exchange between California Democrat Senator Dianne Feinstein and Mr. Comey.
Special Counsel Mueller found that Michael Cohen, Trump's personal attorney, pursued the Trump Tower Moscow project on Trump's behalf during the campaign. Is there a counterintelligence concern when a candidate for political office pursues a lucrative business deal in Russia at the same time he publicly claims to have zero interests in Russia?
Yes, because of the ability that offers the foreign adversary to have leverage over that individual.
Correct. And does this type of counterintelligence concern warrant investigation?
It may, depending on what facts you have to predicate the investigation.
Thank you. You told the Inspector General that you received no requests from the Obama-Biden White House to investigate members of the Trump campaign. You've also said that if President Obama or a member of his administration asked the FBI to investigate the Trump campaign, your answer would be not only no, but hell no. Did President Obama or Vice President Biden ever ask you to investigate a political rival or to go easy on a political rival?
Never.
That was Senator Dianne Feinstein questioning former FBI Director James Comey earlier today on Capitol Hill. Here with more on the story, we're joined by national security reporter of The Washington Post, Devlin Barrett. He's also the author of October Surprise, How the FBI Tried to Save Itself and Crashed an Election. Why was former FBI Director Comey on Capitol Hill today?
Director Comey was on the Hill because Republicans still want to challenge him on how he ran the investigation into the Trump campaign in 2016. They're very critical of what the FBI did, and they want to publicly call him to account.
What did he reveal today?
He really didn't say much new in terms of information. He did say that certain mistakes that were made in the course of the investigation, which have gotten a lot of attention from Republicans, he wasn't aware of those mistakes the FBI was making at the time. He learned of them later, he said, from an internal investigation that reviewed all this stuff. But he insisted repeatedly to the lawmakers that at the time he did not know about those shortcomings.
Did he take accountability for them?
He did. He said, you know, the responsibility lies with me because I'm the FBI director. But, you know, he also cautioned that, you know, in the main, he's still proud of what the investigation did and how it was run. And that definitely angered some Republicans who feel that there's a lot to be concerned about in that investigation.
What were those shortcomings?
So for one thing, when it came to getting court-ordered surveillance on a Trump advisor named Carter Page, the Inspector General for the Justice Department found that those applications had a lot of significant errors and omissions. And so the court really wasn't given the full picture about Carter Page when it was signing off on this surveillance, which lasted about a year. And that's one of the big ones. The other one is that there were instances where, for example, there was a key source in some of the information gathering in the investigation. And Director Comey said today he was unaware of some of the information that cast doubt on the reliability of that source. These things all relate primarily to the part of the investigation surrounding Carter Page, but Republicans have tried to argue that the flaws in Carter Page's case really represent a broader and more deeply flawed overall investigation.
Why?
Because there are the Republicans' argument here is that if the Justice Department and the FBI had been honest about their full knowledge of Carter Page, they never would have pursued that. And without pursuing Carter Page, maybe a lot of this Russia investigation doesn't get much steam. Now, Comey and other former FBI officials vehemently dispute that argument, saying Carter Page was one fairly small part of the overall investigation, and that the other parts of the investigation were well done and found evidence of crimes. And so therefore you can't blame the entire Russia investigation for the mistakes and the errors that happened in the Carter Page piece of it.
Was someone held accountable at the FBI for the Carter Page misstatements or lack of information?
So one former FBI lawyer has pleaded guilty to doctoring a document. So that has been one form of accountability. The other issue is that a lot of the people who have worked on that case at that time have since left the FBI. That's, I think, another form of accountability. And what's going on right now is that the Inspector General is going through a whole host of other surveillance applications to see, are these kind of problems widespread at the FBI and the Justice Department, or was it something more unique to this particular case?
What do we know about the Federalist reporting last week that the FBI agents were texting each other about getting liability coverage?
So that was one that the Republicans really seized on at the hearing with Comey. It really doesn't mean very much. A lot of FBI agents, I can tell you from my reporting, a lot of FBI agents get liability coverage, and a lot of them get it when they think they are dealing with a politically sensitive case, which might require them to talk to Congress or be interviewed by Congress or just anything that looks like it might become a political headache at some point. A lot of FBI agents get liability coverage. And frankly, a lot of FBI agents, as they move up the ranks in the FBI, get liability coverage. I think that's one of those instances where Republicans see, you know, dark intent and suspicion. But it's really premised on not necessarily understanding the ins and outs of how the FBI works.
What was said today, or what have we learned today about this over the weeks about the Steele dossier and how that relates to the Republicans' criticism of how this investigation was run.
Right. So the Steele dossier, which was, you know, information gathered by a former British intelligence officer who was doing research for the Democrats, that dossier was a big part of the surveillance application on Carter Page. And so what happened over time is, as you get into, let's say, early 2017, it becomes more and more clear to folks in the FBI that the information in the Steele dossier about Page does not really stand up. And one of Republicans' biggest criticisms of the FBI is the FBI basically understood the flaws of the Steele dossier, but kept presenting it to the court as if it was legitimate and worth believing. And frankly, that's one of the criticisms as well, that this just wasn't a valuable informative document, but they kept using it because they wanted to keep surveilling Carter Page. And that's really what the fight over the Steele dossier is about. Now, the Bureau and other defenders of the Bureau will say, look, that was just about the Steele dossier was really, as an investigative tool, just about Carter Page. It did not contaminate in any way all the other parts of the investigation. But Republicans are very skeptical toward that argument.
Was James Comey asked about that today, and what was the response?
Oh, he absolutely was. He was pressed on it again and again. And what he kept trying to say to them is, overall, it was a good investigation. It was a necessary investigation into the Trump campaign. And that if he hadn't ordered that investigation, if they hadn't looked to see if the Trump campaign was conspiring with Russia, he and his aides should have been fired for not doing their jobs. You know, it's sort of the mirror opposite of what Republicans argue, which is that they should be fired for having pursued this at all.
Devlin Barrett is the national security reporter for The Washington Post. You can follow his reporting at WashingtonPost.com. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
That's all for today's Washington Today. Hope you enjoy your evening.